Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is Sunday, and it's June 1st already, hard to believe. This is our hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million people, women actually, 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any comments that you would like to call in during this time, please get your pencils ready, and I'm going to give you the call-in number, which is area code 646-716-4893. I will repeat that again. Area code 646-716-4893. So, here's the deal. I was waiting for my co-hostess for the first Sunday of the month, Miss Suzette Hinton, my wonderful coach, life coach, who can't be beat, singer, author, coach, life coach, wonderful inspiration to me. But unfortunately, she's not here yet, and hopefully this weekend hasn't been too overwhelming for her, but it could have been, because last night Suzette launched her newest book, Protecting Your Emotional G-Spot. And I'll be reading an excerpt from that a little bit later if she doesn't join me. So in that case, I'm winging this show. So if you would like to call in, if you're listening live, please feel free to do so at area code 646-716-4893. If not, I'll do my best to fill up the hour. Now, here's the other thing. I do have some kind of real annoying respiratory virus that I've been struggling with all week. So if I need to go into a coughing jag, I'm just going to play a song for you while I'm doing it and mute myself. So please understand if you hear more music than usual on this show tonight, that's why. So I'd like to welcome all my listeners. I always start out by making a few announcements. My most important one is that I'm gearing up for my September healing weekend that will take place in California. Very excited about going to Los Angeles and seeing some of my West Coast wonderful women, as well as women from all over the country and outside the country as well. My wonderful friend Gail from Canada will be joining me. Also, my friend Jody from Hawaii will be coming. So there's going to be some wonderful women coming a long distance for this wonderful event, as well as our wonderful LA girls. And in fact, that song you just heard, I Can See Clearly Now, I play that each week when I can, because it reminds me so much of my wonderful friend Heather in California. This is one of her theme songs since, you know, her life has changed so totally. So when I think about seeing her, it's a wonderful thought also. So I'm really excited to be meeting with my West Coast ladies and my ladies coming in from all over. For a healing weekend, we're going to have some wonderful speakers. We're going to have some great workshops. So if you would like to join us for our healing weekend, it's September 20th and 21st, right outside the LA airport, LAX. There's a shuttle bus to the hotel, so you don't have to spend any money on transportation. Just send me an email at bonkay@aol.com. That's bonkaye@aol.com. And it really doesn't matter where you are on your healing journey. You could be at the very beginning. You could be on the road, or you can be past it. Women come who have all kinds of life experiences. Our workshops at the end will help you move along and move on with inspiring stories and what helps women on that next step of recovery. Recovery is different for everyone, but I do like to impress on women there's no set time. It's not as if you only have a small amount of time to recover on this journey. For some people, it could take years. The important thing is to find support, and the great thing about the healing weekends is that even if you don't know anyone when you get there, you form a sisterly bond within moments of meeting everyone, and we all take good care of each other. It's a really wonderful feeling to meet others who have gone through your experience and where you don't have to say even one little word as far as making people understand you. You don't have to look for excuses. You don't have to feel bad about yourself. You're not going to feel stupid. We all have the same story, and we all have the same kinds of characteristics. I always say straight wives are the best wives because we always try the hardest to make things work. I also tell you that there's not a prototype. There is a prototype of a straight wife, so that we're usually the nurturers, the helpers, the people who fix problems and take care of everyone. Because this is who a gay husband looks for, a woman just like us. So there's nothing to feel ashamed about, missing any red flags. I mean, we're all in the same boat. We're just at different parts of the journey. This is a very tough journey to go on, as many of you write to me each week about the pain that you're going through. I think sometimes the worst kind of pain are from the women who are having good marriages, who thought everything was just perfect. And then all of a sudden their whole lives fell apart. But I'm finding more and more another group of women who are coming to me lately. And these are women who are Muslims, who come from different countries, where Muslim is their primary religion and where homosexuality is certainly not allowed. That is something that is definitely not allowed. And these women are in very bad shape emotionally because they just can't walk away from a marriage. That's not one of the acceptable things. And that's pretty much, I mean, it's like that in some other fundamental kinds of religions, but very strongly with that. So if you are a Muslim woman who's listening to this show and you do need support, we have our own little support group now for people of that faith. And you could be from any country, from women from India, from the Middle East, but women who can reach out to each other, because that's the whole part about finding support that's so important, is finding someone you can make a connection to. And, of course, we all have the same connection because we have a gay husband, but sometimes you need someone from the same cultural background, from the same area, from the same country to reach out when you just feel very desperate and alone. So I'm here to be that, you know, person to connect you. And, you know, whatever I can do in that way, please write to me at bonkaye, at AOL.com. Also, I did want to make an announcement tonight on the radio that for the summer months of June, July, and August, I'm going to be taking off our chat room. People are away for the summer. I will resume again in September. I'll be sending out notices to people who are part of our chat system. But for the summer, we're going to be closed down. But you can always reach me at bonk@AOL.com, and I will set you up with other support for the summer, so I don't want you to worry that if you wanted to come to a chat room that to meet other people that you can't do it. It's just a matter that right now that I'll set you up with another type of support. So one of the issues that happened this week that I wanted to talk about, because there have been some interesting things that have happened in the news. And by the way, I do want to mention to you that in 2 weeks on the Father's Day Sunday, I'm really excited to announce that Jason, who runs my Adult Children of Gay Fathers group, is going to be our speaker again. Jason was with us before this past year, and he's a really fascinating guy. You know, it's really funny when I think of all the, you know, like 4 million women in this country, and the majority of us have children, and the majority of us have multiple children who are so affected by this. So there's 4 million of us, there's at least 8 to 12 to 15 million children who are going through some kind of trauma over these marriages, and yet there's really little support for them. So we do have a wonderful support system for them. If you have adult children, 17, 18, and older, into their 20s, 30s, and 40s, who are looking to talk to someone, you know, make sure you give them this link for Jason, who will be our guest on the 15th, because I think it's really important that they find the support that they're looking for as well. Okay, I'm trying to find this article. I'm going to go over to Facebook because I think this was really important. This video went viral this week. A lot of people sent it to me. And let me go over to my special secret room here for our women so I can tell you about this video. And it has here, let's see. I'm going to find it in just a moment. Okay. If any of you haven't seen this video and you would like to see it, if you write to me at bonk@AOL.com, I will be more than happy to send it to you. And I remember that a few months ago, a video came out with a young man where he was sitting on the screen and he kept writing down something on a pad and then erasing it to tell his story about being bullied. And I know that, once again, this was a very hard-hitting kind of story that was on YouTube, and people really, you know, were amazed by the story about bullies. A lot of celebrities got involved with it. And once again, it was a young man sitting there, you know, writing things on a pad, and then, you know, the pad lifted up and it was blank again, and he wrote more things about his story about being bullied. So this video just came out this week, and it was in the Huffington Post. And that was on May 28th, and I'm going to try to play it for you because it's a young man who is just writing on a tablet. So I'm going to read to you what the tablet says, since there's no talking in this video. Let me see if I can get the video up. And he's sitting there. He's 25 years old, and the title of this is A Heartwarming Coming Out Video, and it's with a man named Ben Hobson. Okay, so let me just put this on here. I'll turn up the music for me so I can talk to you while the music's in the background. Now he starts writing with this music in the background, and it says, "Hey, I'm Ben. This is my story." Now he's writing some more on a screen, and it says, 5.5 years ago, my mom died. And it's a little picture of somebody crying, like a little stick figure person. And then he writes, and turns it around, 3 months later, I married my wife, and there's a picture of a man and woman holding hands, smiling. And now the next thing that he's writing is, 7 months later, our daughter was born, and there's a little picture of a baby. Now, the next thing he's writing is, 4 years later, our son was born. Now he's back to his writing, and it says, and that's right, there is a perfect family. The next thing he writes is, except for I had a drinking problem. Now it says, I love drinking because it numbs my feelings. He's back to his writing. And now it says, on New Year's Day, I decided to face my feelings and stop drinking. Next thing that it says, and he's going, huh, like taking a gasp, it turned out that those feelings were gay feelings. And now finally he's writing, after 30 days of no drinking, I came out and told my wife and family. And his final comment, which is coming up, now says, I used to think I had to drink to have a good time. Turns out I just had to be myself. And that's how the video ends. And he's smiling. So it says, Ben Hobson, married father, comes out as a gay in heartwarming video. It says, this is a report from the Huffington Post, and here you thought you were going to make it through the day without crying. In this inspiring video, 25-year-old Ben Hobson shares the story about his journey to living as his authentic, realized self as a gay man and a married father. Hobson tells the reviewer that his mother died nearly 6 years ago, and shortly thereafter he married his wife and the pair had two children. However, despite what he considered to be a perfect family, the father of two developed a heavy drinking problem. After getting sober, he realized that most of his unhappiness is in fact a gay, he is in fact a gay man. And check out the video and see the above to hear Hobson's how his heartwarming story finished firsthand. Now, the thing is this. I agree that it really takes a lot of courage to come out. And it's nice that this is a heartwarming story about a man finding himself. But I didn't see anything in that follow-up as far as now what's going to happen to the wife and to the two children. And this brings me back to, once again, how things are perceived, where I am very much in favor of gay rights. I am very pro-gay, as everyone who listens to my show knows. And I think it's wonderful when men come out, even married men, when they make the admission that this is what the problem in the marriage is, as Ben did, this is what had him drinking. But my point is, I don't see anything here about the heroism of the wife who now has to become a single parent, who now will have to have a lot of obstacles put in front of her that she wasn't counting on. And I think that, once again, that this is a kind of one-sided story that most of us are used to by now, that people don't want to hear our point of view, or people aren't very interested in it, and that we have to kind of grasp on to anything that anybody will listen to try to defend ourselves or our point of view. And that's what does have me, you know, kind of upset all the time that it's pretty one-sided story here. I mean, there's a lot of, there's a lot of comments on this posting and a lot of women who are saying that as a woman who endured the heartbreak of being in love with a man who later came out as gay, I feel for his wife. As sweet as people think this is, don't forget to have some compassion for the woman in a heap of tears because her man is gone and there's no amount of couples therapy that will ever bring him back. It's a heartbreaking, helpless feeling. I'll be so happy for the day when homosexuality is not something that has to be closeted and denied, not only for the happiness and well-being of those who are gay, but also so they don't feel they have to hide behind a mismatched marriage that will potentially devastate the other party when they find out they are in a marriage that will never work no matter how hard they try. And there's a lot of comments on here for the wife and pro-wife. But my point is, I don't feel like we should have to keep defending ourselves with these stories. I think the way that the press reports this is very one-sided. And if you agree with that, let me know. Send me a note at bondk@aol.com. And, you know, I'd just like to know what your thinking is on that. I feel we're always reacting, like we're never the ones in the forefront. And I think it's kind of, like I say, a one-sided story that's not getting any better. I know that a lot of our women feel like they're pushed into the closet when their husbands come out of the closet because of the fact they're embarrassed about what people are going to say when they find out that they have a husband who's gay, that a lot of women think that people are going to look at them differently. The sad truth is that people do look at us differently. They look at us as, you know, what are we, stupid? We couldn't tell. Our husbands weren't gay when they married us. Did we turn them gay? I mean, there's a lot of shame that's attached to this, and there shouldn't be. I always reassure women there's just no way that we can know this and understand this. And I'd like to emphasize that your husbands struggle with this for years and years in their life. They don't even come to terms with it. How would you know this? Unfortunately, society doesn't see things our way, but that's how I see it. I told you earlier about Suzette and her new book, Protecting Your Emotional G-Spot, and I'm sure that Suzette is just totally exhausted from her big book signing yesterday, launching her book. It was a very big event in North Carolina, and she's probably overslept her day today. So I did buy a copy of the book, which is very well written. I just love reading about Suzette. And she has such a wonderful outlook on life and finding happiness. She is a coach. And, you know, this book really helps you find yourself, protecting your emotional G-spot. The one chapter in the book that I was very flattered that Suzette, you know, put me in her book. And I do want to read you that one chapter because she has said some wonderful things in there that really put this in a different perspective and that, you know, I always kind of think along these lines, and sometimes I say them. But seeing this in writing really, you know, helps me feel better. And this is in chapter 12 of Suzette's book. So let me just go to chapter 12. And here, let's see. It's called I Don't Have the Right Plumbing. It starts off with a little dialogue between two ladies. And one says, he's gay, Audrey says to a confused Ginger. But he can't be Raisin's Ginger. He wouldn't have proposed. Maybe there's a medical reason. Ain't no medical reason, Ginger. How would you know, Audrey? He's not sleeping with you. Well, he's sleeping with somebody, and it ain't you. Sex isn't everything, Audrey. Something might really be wrong. That we can agree on. And that's a little conversation. And then it goes into, no matter how much of a woman you become, you'll never be what turns a gay man on. Some women think they can be happy with that. I don't know how. Even if he appreciates your mind and sees you as more than a sexual object, he will never be able to fully love you in a way you deserve. You'll never have his heart. Not many people talk about the straight gay relationships. It's a tough conversation. I can talk about everything else under the sun, But when I disclose my personal experience, folks get that deer in the headlight look. I don't blame them. Though more and more people are supportive of gay rights, and even some states are making marriages between same-sex adults lawful, many folks' personal experiences haven't come out of the closet. I remember watching the Oprah Winfrey Show as Terry McMillan talked about how her gay husband came out to her. Later, when he was given the opportunity to give his side of the story, Terry couldn't help from scowling. It was hard to believe that he didn't know he was gay until after he married her. What an insult to injury. Some would shake their heads and blame Terry for turning him gay. In the 21st century, you'd think we know better. I'm not speaking for Terry, but I can speak from my own experience. At some visceral level, you think that you have been enough, he wouldn't be gay. Gay-straight relationships are especially true in the church. You would think the black church was a microcosm of San Francisco, known for its gay population. From the choir stand to the balcony, it is not rare to see a man walk by with you, shall we say, with quite a strong musicality to him. It is surprising when it's announced that he and a God-fearing woman are about to become man and wife. Suspicions are allayed, at least for a while. Though he carries that musicality, you dismiss it. He and his wife look like they are having a great relationship. When she announces she is pregnant, that settles the issue. He isn't gay, you say with relief. To the untrained eye, the case is solved. Close the books, send the jury home. Deliberations are over and the case is dismissed. But if you could but take a peek into their private lives, what you would find might astound you. Picture this. She's lying in the bed alone. She's just awakened from her sleep, but her husband is not aware of it. He's too busy whispering to the person on the other end of the phone. She's about to ask him to come to bed, but something stops her. She lies there quietly. My wife leaves for work at 8:30 in the morning, he says. You can come over then. I'll just tell her that we needed to discuss church business. Yeah, baby, I can't wait to see you. Mortified, she chokes back the tears. Conflicted between disbelief and an intuition that she's been ignoring for years, she decides to pretend to be asleep. The next morning, while he is in the shower, she grabs his phone and identifies the number around the time he was on the phone. She calls it. Thinking that her husband is calling, the person on the other end says, "I'm on my way, baby." Unable to speak, she hangs up. She can't believe it's a man, a minister at the church. You'd think that'd be enough to make her pack up her bags, take the children, and leave. More times than not, she doesn't. She cries, might even share it with a close friend, and then rationalizes staying. My experience wasn't quite like hers. I never caught my husband in bed with another man. I never ever heard him plan a rendezvous with another man as explicitly. Facts were absent. Despite J.L. King saying that the greatest power we women have is our intuition, many of us deny it. I denied mine. I am so grateful that Bonnie Kay, expert on straight wives, gay husband issues, offers insights for women who suspect. She was my link to sanity during that time. In fact, she even wrote a book called Gay Husbands Say the Darndest Things. Here are a few of them. How can I be gay? I married you. You're a nymphomaniac. You have a bad body odor and breath. All men compare their penis sizes. It's a guy thing. Why would I look at gay porn? I don't know how it got there. So what if I have gay male friends? I'm comfortable with my sexuality. Of course I have a private password for the computer. Everyone needs privacy. I may have an experience or two in my past, but all men experiment during their earlier years. You snore too loud. I don't like sleeping in the same room with you. It keeps me up all night. Several of those are very familiar. Part of protecting your emotional G-spot is to understand you are not in a marriage if your spouse is gay. Let me say that a little bit louder. You are not in a marriage. I don't care how long you've been together or how many children you have come from that union. It doesn't matter how much your mother likes him or what a great father he is. It's not a marriage. I don't care how many well-meaning friends tell you they need to do all they can to save it. Marriage is not a one-size-fits-all deal. Neither is it unconditional. It was an agreement. You both promised you would provide each other with a safe, intimate space that would nurture the union. So strong was your commitment that you said, forsaking all others. It is from a healthy bond that you say, for better or worse, for richer or poorer, in sickness and in health. Those words were never supposed to commit you to a farce. When your spouse is gay, all the vows go out the window. He hasn't forsaken all others. He can't give you the faithfulness and the fidelity necessary for a marriage to survive, to thrive. What you had was a ceremony. So what you both signed the You both signed the license along with the preacher. It does not mean it's a marriage. If a man or a woman is gay and you're not, you aren't in a marriage. You're a participant in an elaborate deception. The home, the children, and you are nothing more than fixtures. You keep them politically correct so no one would suspect otherwise. One of the lies women believe is that sex is optional. That's why they stay in sexless marriages, although they complain about it. Your man or husband might have told you that he sees you as more than a sexual object. To a woman with her self-esteem not on straight, this might sound like a compliment. It's not. If he doesn't see you as a sexual object, he's looking at someone else. That is cause for alarm. If you suspect that your spouse is gay, the best way to protect your emotional G-spot is to insist that he wear a condom. If he has no regard for your feelings, he has no regard for your body. He won't think twice about putting you at risk of sexually transmitted diseases, even HIV and AIDS. You have to protect yourself. Don't leave it up to another person to do it. Secondly, find out all you can. I admit that after two marriages, I had to face the fact that I knew nothing about men. Here's another confusion. I knew even less about gay men. Had it not been for Bonnie Kay and some other angels who supported my search for truth, I would have had a nervous breakdown. Being married to someone gay keeps you in emotional and mental turmoil. There is not enough counseling to help. What sense does it make for someone to try to counsel you into being happy in a closet? Human beings were not meant to live in a closet. And that's that chapter in the book of Protecting Your Emotional G-Spot that was written by Suzette Hinton. We have a caller calling in. Hold on one moment, please. Hello.
Hello. Guess who this is?
Tell me who it is.
This is Suzette Hinton.
Suzette Hinton from? Wait a minute. Is this the same Suzette Hinton as Protecting Your Emotional G-Spot?
Yes, it is I.
Well, I was hoping if I would read, you would call. And it worked. How did that happen?
I don't know.
I said I'm going to read Suzette's chapter here, and hopefully. And it made you appear, Suzette. I'm so excited.
Oh, my goodness.
Did I wake you up?
I told everybody you must
be totally exhausted from your opening yesterday.
Oh, I am. But you know me. Whether exhausted or not, I try to show up.
I know. Well, I'm a little panicked when he didn't, so I started reading anyway.
I'm glad you did. I am so sorry. I was sitting here. My mother is visiting with me, and I was sitting here talking to her, and I said, oh, Lord, it's 10:26. Oh, my God. Oh, my Lord. Oh, my Lord. Girl, I broke out in a menopausal sweat.
Aw. Well, we're so glad to have you here. Because we want to hear all about your book launching yesterday. I was so excited. I love your book.
It was so good. Thank you. Oh, just hearing you say that. You don't know what that does for me.
I've been reading your book, you know, for two.
Extraordinary.
I'm just about done your book. You know, I've read it for 2 days now. And it's just amazing how you put these words together to make women realize what they're up against in life. Amazing.
Yeah, I caught you reading some of it, and I'm sitting here in awe thinking, did I write that?
I know. You had some really profound stuff in there that, you know, I told people that I just loved that. Of course, you know, it's about the stuff that we're interested in, but
yeah.
I did say that, you know, there's so many wonderful things in the book. But I was really so impressed on this particular chapter because of the things that you said, that no matter what happens, this is not a marriage.
It's not.
And I think that women need to hear that.
Yeah.
You know, when I have women who call me and they say, look, he's a wonderful guy, sex isn't everything. You know, a lot of people live without having sex in their marriages. And, it's, you know, because that's the line they feed their women. You know, they like to try to justify it by saying, well, when people get older, what do you think, they keep having sex? And I say, yes, they do. They do keep having sex.
Yeah,
you know,
and
you
if
can't
they
can't,
they
that
want
your
to.
Well,
if
they're having
can't,
it with somebody, right? Right.
Yeah, that's why there's Viagra.
Exactly. They didn't invent it for nothing.
Exactly.
You know, men want to have sex. Even men who can't have sex want to have sex, right?
They want to.
Yep, they want it.
They want to.
And I think that's such a good point, too. You can't do it? Well, you go and you get a pill because you want to do it. So
yeah,
for any woman who thinks...
If they ever sit and listen to their uncles and grandfathers, I mean, they talk about... I wish I was younger. Or, man, you remember, man, everything is about their sexuality. Men are very programmed that way.
Mm-hmm. And I tell women, it's the truth. My boyfriend, 74, very sexual. You know, he wants sex. And it's not just sex, it's making love. But it's a matter that it's something that he feels is the best part of who we are. You know, I mean, he loves me tremendously. I couldn't do much this week. I've been fighting a viral infection, so he's happy just to hold me. But the point is, that wouldn't last very long because he's a straight man. He wants sex. So if man isn't getting sex from you, I say he's getting it somewhere else. And that has to be a red flag to a married woman, right?
Yes, because even if he can't because you're sick or he's sick, he still gonna snuggle up close to you if he can get within any kind of closeness, he's going to still try to spoon you on the sly. I mean, that's just the way That is the way it is. Especially when that person finds you attractive.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the way it is. They want
exactly. And guess what? Even if they don't find you very attractive, they still want to.
That's true.
Because, right? Men want sex.
That's true. That's true.
And guess what? Gay men want sex, too. They just don't want it
with
you.
Hello.
Exactly. In fact, I think they want more sex.
Yeah.
I know. There's something about gay and sex. This tells me gay men want more sex.
Yeah.
Because it's certainly more prevalent in their community than when I look all over. It's very sexually oriented. So if you have a gay husband, you can be sure he's having some kind of gay sex somewhere else.
Yeah.
But I think what's so important for women to realize, like you said in that chapter, tell him you want him to wear a condom. And when I tell this sometimes to women, you know what they tell me, Suzette? If I tell him that, it's going to hurt his feelings, so I'm not telling him that.
Wow.
I've had a few women tell me that, and I sit there gasping. And I say, in other words, you're willing to let him make you sick with either a disease like HIV or syphilis or gonorrhea. You'd rather have that than hurt his feelings when you know that he's out there?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just don't get it. Do you?
No. No.
I think those would really need help.
Yeah, not where I am now. I think I had my kind of crazy back before, but not where I am now.
Mm-mm. Well, you think that's because you've experienced this, or you think that you were probably in that same place?
I think I was very, because you really want them to approve of you. And if you don't have any evidence, like in my case, I didn't have any evidence. So it made me more shy about certain things because he could talk me out of it. But once I truly got the memo and learned that I could trust my intuition, whether I've collected facts or not, then I started making my needs and my health a priority. And I didn't try to hide his secret. I just came right out with, well, this is what I suspect. And he's like, well, it's not true. I said, well, then I'm sorry, but this is what I suspect. And as long as I suspect it, this is what's going to have to happen.
I know it's just so difficult for women who are so entrenched with these men, and they want to prove that they're good wives and that if I do the right thing and you'll learn to love me enough and you won't have those desires. I think that's where we have to look first. I think that's step number one, viewing ridiculous thought patterns that you're having, which you may not know are ridiculous because you're new into this and you haven't looked for support. But it doesn't matter how good a wife you're going to be, those feelings aren't going to go away. I had a woman call me last night, and I felt really bad for her because she's from another culture. I was announcing earlier that I'm trying to form support groups for women who are, you know, from the Muslim faith because they're really behind the door there. You know, when you're a Muslim, you're not allowed to be gay. And, you know, here these women are so devastated because, you know, their husbands can't leave because, you know, it's against the religion, and yet they know what they're doing because, you know, their wives catch on. And, you know, this woman last night was kind of pleading with me, saying to me, well, there must be something I can do. I said, there is nothing you can do. You know, if you have an infection and you go to a doctor, he gives you an antibiotic and you get well. I said, homosexuality is not an illness. It's who a person is. There's no way you can give somebody a pill and they're going to wake up and say, I don't want this anymore. And, you know, she knows it on some level, but she just didn't, she wanted some miraculous solution from me that I can't give her. And, you know, women often come to me, you know, begging for help, for kind of help that I can't give them because it doesn't exist. And yet they'll spend thousands of dollars going to therapists who are telling them, yes, we can change this for you. You know, if he believes strongly enough, if he wants to change this about himself, you know, he doesn't have to act on these behaviors. You know, and women are just willing to dump their money in these pots, you know, to these quacks who, you know, want to give you a peddle this false hope. And I think this is so, you know, destructive to women, don't you?
Yeah, I do. I do. I think it is very destructive.
So let's talk about something positive. Let's talk about your book launching last night.
Oh, it was great. It was great. It was great.
How many people showed up there in North Carolina?
Oh my gosh! I didn't count all of them because some people came in, hugged, kissed me, purchased books, and left, and then others came and stayed. But I can say that they all were excited. So many of them. There were those there that actually even bought my first book. You know, some bought all three. You know, it was just wonderful. I had testimonials from people who had read the two new books. And, I mean, they talked about it to the point that if I were sitting in the audience, I'd want to go buy them. And I love the fact that, like I was telling one of them today, what I loved was that I knew they were really being for real, that the books really impacted them to that point that they weren't just doing it because I was their friend, but what they were saying was really real. And that was so humbling to me.
It is humbling when people listen to, when they feel that what you have to say can have such a positive influence on their thinking and their lives that you can be a change agent for them.
Yes.
Through your book, right?
Yes. I have a voice that liberates and awakens people to really do what they need to do so that they can have the best life that they can have. And that is what, to me, success is for me with my books. And I was just so grateful to see the people that came and they were so supportive and so open. I only had maybe a couple of different acts. One person by the name of Clarinda Anderson did some spoken word, and she did an original piece. And actually, my sister and I ended up performing. I brought my keyboard, and we sang together. And that was a high point. It's already posted for you to see it, Bonnie, but it was such a high.
It looked beautiful. I looked beautiful there.
Thank you.
I know. I felt so bad I couldn't be there. And if I was younger and a little closer, I definitely would have been.
Well, you know, you were there in spirit. And just allowing me to be able to use, you know, just allowing me to be able to use your
During your book launching,
book,
I was
you know?
Reading your book.
How
I'd like
about
to mention
that?
A couple things from, I was. And I'd like to mention a couple things, if it's okay to women, if you don't mind
sure.
listening. I mean, if it's okay with you. But
sure.
one of the important parts you bring up in this book, and this is something that Donna Anderson from lovefraud.com has said to our women and written about also. You have this chapter in the beginning, didn't your mama tell you not to talk to strangers? And
yeah.
There's a little conversation that starts out. You notice him browsing the shelves as you ramble through the bin of DVDs. He's fine, you think, as you casually glance his way. Engaging in conversation with other shoppers who join in for looking for a DVD to rent or buy, you don't notice that he's slowly moving closer. That's a good movie, a voice speaks from behind you. When you look up, it's him. Your heart almost jumps out of your chest. Stay cool, you think to yourself. So you've seen it, huh? She says coyly with a slight smile. Yeah. I was leaning towards this one. Oh, you don't want that one. I don't? Nah, it's okay, but it's not as good as the other. How do you know about what I'd like? He blushes and says, I'm just suggesting. As you walk out of the video store, you see him in the parking lot against his car. You know that you want him. Before you can turn on the ignition, you look up and he's in your window. Your mind races as he contemplates what you should do versus what you want to do. Just as sure as he's standing there with his biceps bulging under the moonlit sky, you want to rip his clothes off and get him right then and there. So, you know, you start off by saying that when you're looking at people, all of a sudden you have these hot flashes and, you know, you feel this sense of excitement to a total stranger. And you're saying in here, you know, it says that when you were growing up that your mother always told you, don't talk to strangers. That's what we grow up on, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, there's a reason why they tell you that. It said we paid attention to what our parents said. If someone rolled up their car while I was walking home from school, I would look straight ahead and not look their way. If they kept hounding me, I would walk to a nearby house and knock on a door. If they saw me do that, they'd soon speed away. The most I recall ever doing was saying, I don't talk to strangers, and kept on walking. Fortunately, I wasn't harmed. But that's not always the case. Predators have become savvier. Even when a parent has been convinced that their little Charles or little Susie would never go anywhere with a stranger, they've looked on in horror how easily a child can be led by someone who talked nice, showed them a doll, or asked them to help find their puppy. In real life situations, it could mean the difference between life or death. It is rare, I mean rare, for a child to be returned to his parents. Regardless of the reward or how tearful the plea, most times more than not, the news is not good. Why as grown-ups do we put ourselves at risk when we ought to know better? I listened with horror as a woman told me she had been raped repeatedly by someone she met out of state. When I asked her why she met someone she didn't know, she said they had been talking on the phone for a while. He was a professional, and she felt confident enough to meet him. When she told me she also allowed him to pick her up from the airport, I bit my tongue so hard I almost needed stitches. She was a grown woman, so I didn't want to sound like a parent, yet in my mind, I kept pondering the question, why would you meet someone you hardly know? And you go on there and, you know, talk about other people too. But, you know, it's like you're saying, stop, you know, stop. What are you doing? Why aren't you thinking? Why are you taking these kind of risks? But we do see people taking them over and over, and I am guilty. I'm going to raise my hand. I don't anymore, but I did plenty of times take unnecessary risks.
Yeah.
Why do we do it, Suzette?
I think we just, our attraction just hardwires our brain to the point that we lose all sensibility. Or I think one of the things that I determined early on, because I online dated, and that's actually how I met my sweet Robert online. But the thing about it is I would tell the guys that I met online, I don't talk on the phone for a long time, and I don't chat online for a long time because I do not want to create a premature familiarity with you because I haven't even met you yet. It's not real till I meet you. So if a guy only wanted to talk on the phone or wanted to chat and never had time to meet me face-to-face, I had to scratch him, you know, delete him off my list and keep it moving. Because to me, it's not real. And I think for us women, we fall in love with what we hear. And I think that's why a lot of times you listen to talk shows and you sit there as this woman is crying, telling Dr. Phil that she emptied her life savings to help God that she's in love with that she's never met who needed money. It's because we fall in love with what we hear. And so knowing that, I said, no, I'm not going to spend a lot of time hearing something from somebody I haven't met and forming a premature familiarity.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't even met him yet. I don't even know him. You know, we say he's a good man, but we don't know when he's the parts of him that are not so good. We don't know it yet.
And you're right, there are so many predators out there, and we do take unnecessary risks.
We do.
I'm guilty of that.
And the thing that gets me, Bonnie, is you would think that would be something that teenagers do or people in their 20s. I'm talking 40s and 50s.
Oh, me too.
Women
doing
that stuff. And I'm just like, wait, y'all, we're supposed to know better.
I know. We really take so many chances. And a lot of these men aren't even real. And
no,
go ahead. I'll let you talk for a minute. Boy. Go ahead.
Oh, they're not real. But the thing about it is they know how to plug into our G's, our emotional G-spot, whatever that thing is, whether it's, oh, gosh, I might not have been attracted to somebody else, but to this guy, he thinks I'm beautiful. He saw my picture, and he said I was beautiful. You know, whatever your emotional G-spot is, whatever that thing is, they talk to you, and my parents used to call it sweet nothings.
Mm-hmm.
They hit you with the sweet nothings, and you just go into this stupor. And after a while, you are being loyal. I remember, I don't know if I put this in the book, but I remember when my girlfriends had met a guy maybe one time in Texas. And she came back home, and she was talking to him over the telephone. We happened to go out one day, and she said to me, oh, God, he's calling. Suzette, I got to take this. And after it was over, you know, we just were talking, and she said, because, girl, he gets upset if he calls me and I don't pick up the phone. I said, wait a minute. Didn't you just meet this cat? That's exactly what I said. Didn't you just meet him? You know, you had one meeting where you actually flew to meet him, which I already have a problem with that. You flew to meet him, somebody that you had met online. Y'all hit it off, sort of, kind of. And now he's telling you that you need to stop everything you're doing to pick up the phone because it's him? I said, wait a minute. Has he invested enough in you to even make any kind of demands? Well, he said he wants us to be exclusive. I said, baby doll, if you think that this man after meeting you one time is exclusive with you, then you know what? That's a lie. And he should not be getting this kind of press, and he hasn't earned it.
You know what? Along those lines, I would like to tell you that a good friend that I have is looking to meet someone, and she's trying the internet dating deal. You know, most of my friends try it with very little success, but some people do have success, right? But going back to the ones who don't, she met a man it was 2 weeks ago online, and they were talking back and forth, and something clicked. So she thought, you know, he'll be somebody nice to meet, but she doesn't want to jump into anything immediately. But he would call her, you know, on the phone, and they spoke 3 or 4 times a day. He was always very pleasant, and she liked the attention because it was making her feel good. But then after like a week, it was only like a week, and, you know, he called, and she didn't answer the phone because she wasn't available. And the next call was, well, where were you when I called? I worry about you. Well, how worried can you be about somebody who you've never met?
Thank you.
You know, there's just,
thank you.
You know, there was a big red flag to her, and she didn't like it. So she was smart enough for me. But I do know But there are, I know a woman out there, and it was a very sad story. She's an older woman, and she still feels like her heart is open to meeting someone. And you have these online dating services for people who are older, too. Mm-hmm. So she met somebody online. You know, I guess you saw her profile. She was doing one of these, like, Our Times or whatever it is. And she literally fell for him so badly on the internet because he was giving her all these beautiful messages that she wanted to hear.
Yeah.
And I said to her, look, this is not normal. And she said, oh, you know, don't rain on my parade and this and that. Then she started, you know, signing her emails to everybody from both of them. This is within a week, you know, with his picture that he sent her. And it just didn't sound what I call kosher. And I said to her, did you ever check him out? Did you ever do anything? You know, and so, of course, you know, she did. And then she was annoyed at me. And I said, well, let me check him out for you because the whole story sounded so strange. And as I was checking him out, there was absolutely nothing on him. And I feel for somebody who's made it somewhere in life, you find something on him somewhere, on Google or somewhere.
That's right.
So then he comes with this story that is a very standard story for these vulnerable women from these men they haven't met. I have to go out of town on a journey. I have a business deal in, you know, Hong Kong, India, or wherever. And, you know, as soon as I get back, you get a hotel ready, I'll be there. You know, we're going to make the most beautiful love. And she was, I said to her, this whole story, and he had his grandson going with him. And as soon as, like, 2 days later, you know, he came up with the story, I can't believe this happened. I lost my wallet on my way here. I'm in a panic. Do you think you could take some, you know, get me some money? And as soon as I get there, I'm going to pay you back.
Yeah. Yeah.
She realized
this
is real. Then she opened her eyes. And then she started to look back at all the emails and how they were all like a different kind of font and stuff. I mean, they have guys working out of places out, you know, in these third world countries or Europe or wherever they are.
That's funny.
They have this business with women. They're looking vulnerable women. I saw a whole story on Dr. Phil about this.
Oh, yeah. About women. Oh, yeah.
Pay tens of thousands of dollars to an unknown man.
That's
and
right.
They said to her,
that's
he's not
right.
even real, and she didn't want to hear it. She said,
exactly.
He's real. So it's really sad, right?
It is very, very sad, and that's one of the reasons why it's not good to talk to strangers, because they can plug into whatever that place is.
They know how to do it, right?
And my thing is, you don't want to expose that to somebody. And that's why I tell my girlfriends, those that will listen, I, t- tell them, I said, you don't expose everything about yourself to a man on the first date. Well, I believe in being honest and real, and you know, I want to play games, so, you know, I just believe in just being real and just putting it out there. I'm like, no. He has to earn the right to hear your story. Just because he showed up doesn't mean
mm-hmm.
he gets to get everything about you. He has to earn it.
Mm-hmm.
He has to earn it. And I think the thing, because there's another chapter in there I talk about being bilingual, where do you speak male or do you speak female, is that I think
mm-hmm.
a lot of times we women, we impose our feminine thinking on men instead of really just finding out how they think and what they do. And once we find out that they don't think like us,
mm-hmm.
then we stop. Because a woman might think if she's sharing everything about her life, she's saying to that man, I don't have any secrets. What he's hearing is, I'm desperate. I'm open. See, I done told you everything. There is no mystery. So the reason there is no second date is there is no mystery. You told me everything I wanted, you know, everything up front, made it boring. You were like a deer that just came and laid here and said, shoot me. To
exactly.
learn how they think and learn their language.
Mm-hmm.
So that you know how to present yourself so that you don't end up exposing too much too soon to a stranger.
Mm-hmm. That really leaves you so vulnerable, doesn't it?
It does. It makes you feel like, and that's why you feel so angry when
mm-hmm.
he doesn't call you back.
Mm-hmm.
Because you put it all out there.
I know.
You know?
Like women don't,
yeah.
not quite so desperate.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand it. Don't get me wrong. I'm not judging anybody. It's just that I've
right.
been through all these hard knocks in my own life. I don't know if anybody really listens to anybody, but I know if I could do things differently, I would have done them differently. Go, you know, now that I look back, a lot of
yeah.
the mistakes I made were by my own lack of self-confidence or my own low self-esteem, you know,
yeah.
and it didn't build up at all by doing these things. You know, you think, if I go with this one, he's going to make me feel better. No, if you don't feel good about yourself, no one can make you feel better. Would you say that's true?
I say that I completely agree with you. Agree, because we're looking for somebody to validate us. And the interesting thing about it, or the thing that's really true about it, is a person can only mirror what you think about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
They can't validate what ain't there.
I think that'd be a great saying, like a little thing on Postbook. You know, a person can only mirror. What is it? Say it again.
Oh, God. A person can only mirror what you think about yourself.
Yeah. They don't think much about yourself. They're not going to think, they're not going to think much about you either, and they're going to treat you accordingly.
Exactly. And like I told some friends of mine, especially when you're dating, whether it's online or your friends introduce you to somebody or you meet them while you're rifling through DVDs, regardless of all that, you know, the person that teaches them your value is you. They come, even the good ones, to know, have to be taught who you are. There are certain things, as much as I love Robert and he's the most wonderful man I've ever met, we had certain crossroads where I had to show him who I was by my standard.
And you know what?
And it made him value me more.
And, you know, I was reading that in your book, and you're never going to believe this, that when I was reading it, because you were so bluntly honest about it,
mm-hmm.
it really shook me up. Because, you know, we've never really discussed anything but up, 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 up with you and Robert, not
yeah.
knowing that there had times when things were rough and you had to figure out what to do. But you weren't
yeah.
willing to compromise who you are to do it, correct?
Couldn't do it. I couldn't. At the age I was at,
mm-hmm.
I couldn't do it. And my thing was I did not want to have to dumb myself down to be with somebody.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to have to act like I didn't know what I know to be with
mm-hmm.
you. And my thing is, if we're going to if this relationship is going to make it, we have to both be able to be who we are at our core. Sure, there has to be certain adjustments, but the adjustment should not be
compromising
who you are. Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Kind of reminds
you just,
me.
You just find a way to coexist. You find a way to meld those areas into something lovely, but you shouldn't
mm-hmm.
have to compromise who you are to do it.
You know, it's interesting. The song that Billy Joel wrote that I think you may be familiar with, "Just the Way You Are."
Yeah.
You know, don't go changing to try to please me, right?
Hey, yeah, I love that.
Well, I do love it, but then when you listen to it a little closer, I think it's kind of knocks you down when it says, don't need clever conversation, never want to work that hard. Okay, so like in other words, if you want to be smart, he doesn't want to hear it. He just wants someone he can...
attention to that part. Yeah.
Right. That's the part that always struck me where he goes, don't want clever conversation, never want to work that hard. So in other words, if you want to talk smart, he must just love you the way you are when you don't talk, because he wants the conversation and he wants you to listen.
Yeah.
And I think that's pretty reflective on Billy Joel's personality, from what I understand. And I think a lot of times we try to conform to men to make them love us and sacrifice who we are. And that's what I was so inspired about in your book when I was reading it yesterday, that when tough times came, you didn't just give in to them. You weren't willing to sell out who you are at this stage of your life. You fought hard to get to where you are.
Exactly. And because I valued it so much, I taught him how to value it.
Men certainly do need to.
Because I wasn't going to give it up. So he had to make a decision. I wasn't going to dumb myself down. I was not going to accept less than what I knew I needed to feel whole and to feel good in the relationship. I wasn't going to do it. I couldn't. It's like, you know, you get to a point that you just can't.
Well,
I was like, if you need me to do this and I can't do it, then we're at a point where I'm sorry. Change
right, but
it.
A lot of women don't have that strength. You know, and that's what hurt me when I read this, because I know how much you love Robert, and I know when you met him, this was your soulmate, the man who was everything to you. So I could never think for a second that if you had to leave for whatever reason that you could ever, you know, that would hurt you so, so much. And just reading that hurt me, thinking you had to go through that pain where there was that time in your life where you had to consider that this won't be there for me anymore because we can't come to some kind of, you know, compromise.
Mm-hmm.
And my heart really hurt for you. I'm so happy to see that, you know, you figured out how to work it out with him or that he could understand how important it is for you. But a lot of us don't have men like that. You know, a lot of us don't have men who are willing to listen.
And you know what
change.
I learned? That's it, willing to change. Because my thing was, and I said it before, and I didn't know my life was going to be an example of it. But you don't. A lot of times, we don't know how much a man really loves us unless he's had to give up something to have us. And it was up to that point where it was all lovey-dovey, but there was no sacrifice that had to be made. So I wasn't quite so sure whether he was in love with me or the idea of me, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it does make sense to me.
Until we came to a crossroads where I said, baby, you know what, I love you, but I cannot go, I can't do this. We can't relate this way. I can't do this. Standing my ground and him experiencing what it would be like without me.
And, yeah,
and
this
when
is
he
so
realized
hard.
He could, when he realized he could not fathom his life without me, he said, "I don't care what I got to do, I've got to have you." And he was the one that suggested we go to couples counseling, not me. And I want you to know that man showed up. It wasn't one of those things where a man that suggests couples counseling and he just kind of comes like you held him at gunpoint.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kind of a half lackluster, I'm here, but you know he's not really participating. He's not really being for real. He's really not doing the homework. He really is not into it. This man showed up so strong until it moved every doubt I had of his love.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
that's what
made me feel comfortable enough to marry him. Because up until that point, I had to know that I was the most important person. I had to know.
Right.
I had to know it.
Well, I took a calculated risk that also one time a couple of years ago with my boyfriend of now over 20 years, who is the true love of my life, soulmate, but he was having some problems and it was interfering with us.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to him, you know what? I've been understanding, and it was going on for a while. And I said, but guess what? I don't want to understand it anymore. I want you to fix whatever this problem is.
Yes.
I've given you time to fix it, and it's just bringing you down. And you're drowning, and I can't pull you up because you're drowning.
Yes.
So the only way to make this work is by saying goodbye to you and let you see what it's like without me and see, is it worth it to, you know, continue on without me? Now, that's a calculated take, because, you know, I was madly in love with him. I couldn't picture my life without him, but I couldn't picture my life with him like that. You know,
I was going to interject something. I think what it comes down to is we can't picture our life without them, but even more importantly, we can't picture our life without us.
Well, exactly. I just couldn't do it anymore. You know, it wasn't like over a week or two or a month. It was going on for months. And he just lost himself in this whole problem, you know, and, you know, it was a family problem. But, okay, you know, I gave time for it to get resolved, but it wasn't resolving itself.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, you have to see if this is more important. I said, we're losing us. I don't want this to be about me or about you. We're a team.
Mm-hmm.
If we can't be a team, then we're not going to be a team. I'm not going to play along with this anymore. You know, because it affected how he reacted towards me. I mean, not mean, but he just was detached.
Yeah.
He really needed that wake-up call, and he said, well, I'll call you. I said, no, do not call me. I said, I don't want you calling me. I said, I don't want to be reminded of what I don't have. I'm going to, you know, and I thought to myself, I may have to accept this and move on in my life. And I wasn't very happy, but I knew I could never be happy the other way.
That's right.
So, months. I mean, he tried a few times. He sent me cards and stuff, but I didn't respond. But after a month, he said, can I come and talk to you? I'm better now. So I said, all right.
It makes them appreciate you more. It makes them appreciate who you are.
He said, I don't want to live without you. He said, if I don't have you in my life, I can't be happy. So he said, I'll do whatever I have to do to get back to where we were. I don't want to be like this. I don't want to be alone. He said, I'm not looking to meet somebody else. He said, I love you. And, you know, that's sometimes what you have to do. But I know, I guess when I read that, that's what I thought about, and it hurt me because I remember how badly I hurt then.
Yeah.
But if you don't, you're going to be hurt worse, right?
That's right. And I was willing to walk away if it wasn't going to work because I didn't want to, but I was willing to. And I think that taught him, puts her self-care above everything else. So it makes me value her self-care.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And like I said, if we can't take care of ourselves, we'll never be able to love someone in a healthy way.
That's right.
Right?
That's right. That's right.
You have to love
the thing about it is we have to show up as us. If this person is falling in love, let them fall in love with who you really are. That way you ain't got to pretend to be nobody else.
Exactly. I don't want to have to pretend to anybody at this stage of my life that I'm somebody who I'm not. Or I don't want to have to take care of someone who's not going to take care back of me, you know. A relationship is love of two people taking care of each other. And that's not to say, look, when my boyfriend was sick, I was there for him every minute of the way. I didn't care that he was sick. I wanted him to get well. And when I don't feel, I mean, this whole week, you know, I've had a terrible respiratory infection, but he's really been there for me every day. What can I get you? How can I help? You know, because he wants me to get better. He doesn't like seeing me sick. He said it hurts me when you're sick. So I'm saying that is going through the bad times like that, not the times that you have to change yourself to be something else for someone. That's not what it's about, right?
Yeah, it's not. Because when we do that, we really don't mean to, and I don't think it's malicious, but it's manipulative.
Uh-huh.
When we do that, we are manipulating because we think that we have to do that to get them to love us. So we're presenting a fictitious person. We're not bringing who we are to the table. So they're falling in love with a figment of their imagination that they should be upset when you now all of a sudden now you're being who you really are. They should be upset.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're not upset. Most of them are. Then I think it's really you have to cut your losses as much as it hurts. And I took that calculated risk, and so did you. That is, if these guys can't accept us for who we are, nurture it, cherish it, encourage it to grow and build, because in any way, you know, they're having issues of their own, then they're not the man that we need. That's one thing I will tell you for your own life lesson, Suzette. You know, it's amazing how I think about with my boyfriend, and, you know, I've been in love with him for 23 years, but he only gave in to me, you know, like 21 years ago. But the thing is, you know, not even quite that. But the thing is, his kind of love has always nurtured me to make me feel I can do anything. You know, he gave me the inspiration to write the books that I wrote because he encouraged me and he said, what you're doing is important. You know, even though it took time away from us, even though that sometimes I had to prioritize on my deadlines. And I said, I'm really sorry. Got to get this done. He said, don't even worry about it. You know, you'll get it done, and we have our time together after that. So he always said, right, well, to him, me feeling fulfilled is important to him. And that's what women need to find a man who can do that for you. I mean, he always tells me, oh, I love you. You're beautiful. I tell him I'm fat. He says, you're comfortable. You know, he says, you're built for comfort. And he's you think you're fat. I don't, I know, he's blind. But he's blinded to my downside, you know, sides of things. And he just loves me the way I am. And you need a guy who can encourage you and not knock you down. Like, you know, I know my friend of mine has a friend whose boyfriend tells her, well, I'll go shopping with you because your clothes aren't right. Or I don't like the way your hair looks. Or you should do something better with your makeup. I don't want to hear that. Don't want to hear that.
Mm-mm.
That's not love to me, if you have to talk to somebody like that. I mean, she doesn't look that terrible, and her makeup's fine. It's just that, you know, she's not the kind of, you know, woman that he's looking for, then she should be away from him.
That's
if he can't be after who you are, why are you trying to be who he wants you to be? Am I right?
You are so right. Because if my man wanted me to have French manicured or beautifully manicured nails all the time, I am not the one. I am not the one. I am a natural person. It is very rare. Now, I'll put color on my toes, but most time, my fingers, they're going to be natural or gnarled because I bit everything off of them. But he accepts me as I am. And I love the fact, even as you were talking about the support that you got when you were writing your book, all I could do was say, I concur, because when I was busy working, he didn't come over trying to demand my attention. That man got off work, swung by home, fixed dinner, and came to my house with pots and pans of dinner he had already cooked.
Good.
Just because he knew that I needed to eat.
Now, that's a man worth keeping.
Yes, indeedy.
Right?
Yes, indeedy. Girl, you ain't got to tell me.
So did he feel special at your book opening last night?
He came and he, boy, we worked him so hard because he got straight off work. He works on weekends. He came straight from work and immediately started lifting tables and moving amplifiers and moving all these ladies, telling them what to do, because it was only he was the main muscles there. So he was moving stuff, pulling tables, pushing things, and doing it. And I looked at him while I was talking, and he was just, I mean, his eyes were glued to me. They were glued to me. And after it was over, he said, "You were fantastic." And then he helped me pack everything up, you know, helped me. I had my car. He had his SUV. We packed all that stuff up, got to the house. He helped me unload it. And bless his heart, he passed out while I was still on Facebook looking at stuff, and he was snoring, and I was thinking to myself, I love this man.
Isn't that wonderful?
I love this man.
It's really true. I keep reminding my boyfriend of this. When somebody's snoring, like some women get so annoyed or men get annoyed, I love to hear the sound of a snore because it means the person you love is with you.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, I do.
I mean, and that's how I feel too. That's a feeling of security. So I love it.
It is. Sometimes I'll just look at him, and I'll just pat him. And it's so funny, even when he's asleep, if I grab my hand and kiss it. I just love that I'm so welcome that even when he's asleep and not really conscious of what he's doing, he's still loving me.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, I'm 20 years down the line and it's still happening here.
Oh, my goodness. Girl, I'm going to be old and toothless and still loving that man.
Well, I want to tell you, I still have my caps in my mouth and I'm still loving them.
Still loving them.
Be an encouragement for you, Suzette. He actually has more teeth than I have. That's fine. So anyway, let's tell people how to reach you and get that book.
Yes, if they go to my website, I'm going to make it easy for them, www.suzetterhinton.com. They can find whatever they need.
Right, and if they go to you on my website, can they get there somehow?
Uh-huh.
Let's see if the link will take me there. Hold on 1 second. When I go to gayhusbands.com,
okay.
And I go down to Suzette, and I click in, because you're right there, and there you are. Do you lack enthusiasm? Not as creative as you used to be? Yeah, and let's see, there's
one book.
And
they'll find the books, too, on Amazon.com, because I haven't updated my coaching website. I don't think I've updated it with the new books yet.
Uh-huh.
So they can
they can just contact me, and I'll give them your information. But Suzette,
yeah.
I'm hoping that you're a guest on my other show, my author's show, in a couple of weeks, so we can launch the new book, too. Would that be all right?
Oh, I would love it.
I plan on having you as a guest in July. I'll send you the dates, and you'll tell me when you want to come.
Okay. Sounds great.
All right. All right, sweetie. So even though you were late, I forgive you because you had a big night yesterday.
That's okay, Bonnie. You know what? I just love you. I love you, love you, love you, love you. If I had to have my eyelids propped up, I'm here.
Well, if you want to get closer, you can always move up here. You're young enough to move. I mean, that's probably a better option here, too. There's a lot more.
I'm a Southern girl. I can't help it.
All right. Well, we'll just have to be the way we are. But our day will come when we'll meet and hug and everything else, right? One way, somewhere,
indeed.
Somehow.
All
right. Isn't your son up this way?
He is. He is.
Right. Wasn't it time you visited us?
I know. It's time. It is time for me to visit both of you.
Okay,
My Philly family is growing.
That's right. Don't forget that. All right, everybody. We'll be back with you next week. And on behalf of the Straight Wise Show and Suzette Hinton, love to all of you. And love to you, Suzette.
Love to you, Bonnie.
All right.
Love to you.
Bonnie.
Good night, everybody.